This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
A.K.A. Feathers!
That was an interesting one. Okay. Yeah,
that's my, if we're doing like WrestleMania or something.
Okay.
In this corner, Feathers!
Okay. Well, you saw me ride that, what did I ride at TRE?
The shark!
And how easily I gave up and was like, nah, this isn't for me. That would be me in the corner of a ring. I'd be like, nah, don't hit me. I'll just sit down.
The funny thing was, did you think you were on the shark for a long time?
No.
Okay. Because Robbie said you thought you were on there for a long time. I'm like,
Well, what's crazy is like you were sitting on the shark, but it didn't start moving for like 20 seconds. And so you were just like sitting there. But then as soon as it started moving, it was like, and you're off.
Well, so here's the thing.
I laughed very hard at that video.
There's lots of things that I will put myself in an uncomfortable position for, and riding a mechanical shark is not one of them. Like, if I get hurt, it's going to be doing something epic, not riding a shark. So I was like, and you're going down. Boom.
I would get hurt on a shark. Meg, would have you? You love sharks. Would have you ridden the shark?
I think I would have had to have just because it's a shark. Like, if it was a bull, I would have been like, absolutely not. But it's a shark.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I would have had to.
Anyways.
Okay, anyway, you are listening to Fuel for the Soul, the podcast where we sometimes talk about nutrition and hydration and how it affects performance. So today, or this week, we're talking all about GI distress issues, problems on the run, off the run, and answering your questions about them.
Should we call this the porta potty episode?
We could.
Uh-huh. Remember that time Robbie was using a porta potty and he didn't lock the door, so somebody walked in on him?
Yeah, that was awkward. I don't even like thinking about it.
I just did. I have very visual too, so I can picture everything.
Oof. Okay. Oof. Get that out of your mind. Sorry, Robbie.
Okay. Let's just get right into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one is from Jen.
Hi, Jen.
She says, good morning. I was wondering if Megan has any insight on proper fueling for someone who struggles with IBSD. I find my stomach issues often lead to energy struggles and trying to add mileage and often end in training interruptions. Would a FODMAP diet be advisable? Thank you.
Well, but before we get started, I don't know why she didn't ask Feathers. Why would she ask you that, Meg?
Well, she spelled Megan.
She spelled
Megan.
It. Yeah. She spelled it like me. Yeah.
Jen.
She did.
Everybody knows it's Feathers. Like, if you see Miss Featherston out in the public, you got to shout Feathers. Otherwise, she won't turn around. She doesn't even remember her name anymore.
We ran past somebody at the running event who called Heather. And I was like, that's for me. Because people just randomly call me Heather. And I was like, I don't respond to Heather. Like, if someone calls me Heather, I will keep walking.
What if they have a speech impediment?
It's just
they can't get the pho sound.
It's either Feathers or Megan. Yeah. I love it. Well, to Jen's question here. So I feel like we need to define some terms here so that people know what we're talking about. So IBS, obviously irritable bowel syndrome, super common ailment of the GI tract. And honestly, there's no real clinical diagnostic test for IBS. It's just when we've ruled out that they don't have Crohn's, that they don't have another inflammatory bowel disease, and you're still having issues. It's like, well, shoot, you've got IBS, you know? So it's kind of like this diagnosis vague. Right, which can be super frustrating for people who have, you know, IBS. And then it's either IBS-D or IBS-C. So D means it's overactive, so we're having diarrhea. And C means things slow down, so we're constipated. So we see, like, both sides of the equation, but either, you know, can get in the way of running. So they've done a ton of research and found that – what do you need to say, T?
I'm shaking my head because I don't remember – like, this seems like new problems. I don't remember. Is it just that we didn't talk about it before?
Probably.
It's like, it seems like in the last 10, 15 years, people are like, I got the IBS. And I'm like, what did they have before?
And if someone just says, I have IBS, and they don't say D or C, like, you just have problems both directions all the time?
I would think so.
I just assumed it was always I thought it was not constipation. I thought it was the other thing.
It usually is. It usually is. Yeah. Like, I have all sorts of crazy, weird stomach issues over the years. So my chart, if I like log on, says I have IBS. No one ever told me I did, but I think they're just like, she doesn't have anything else. She's got, you know what I mean? So like, it's just kind of this vague like thing that they,
you don't have it anymore though, do you?
My stomach has always bothered me. That's why I'm so like passionate about this hydration stuff and, you know, like helping other people.
I did not know that.
Stomach issues. Yeah. I mean, I mean, what I need to do to make sure I control it. That's why I eat a lot of bagels and a carb load instead of like other things. But
well, I mean, you stayed at our house and I didn't notice anything. Like there was no mad rushes.
Right. Right. It's not right. Like I know what to eat so that it feels okay. And I know if I eat something that doesn't, that it's not going to feel great. So I just eat what I know.
As a matter of fact, I've never seen you irritable.
I'm so sweet, aren't I?
Period. You're very even keeled.
Well, thank you. I try. So one, for somebody who has IBS and can't figure it out, it can be super frustrating. So I work with a ton of runners that do. So what she mentioned was FODMAP. So FODMAP is something that has come kind of onto the scene in the last 20 years. And it stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. So all of that to say, they're all carbohydrates. So someone with IBS, when they're consuming carbohydrates, is not absorbing all of those carbohydrates in their small intestine, which means some carbs are left behind. They ferment. Fermentation causes gas, which causes bloating, distension, diarrhea, all those things. So all of this goes back to certain carbohydrates in people with IBS are fermented and are causing GI issues. So she's asking, should I follow this diet so that I don't have these GI issues in the background? So that's a lot of foods. There is a lot of foods that are high, quote unquote, FODMAP foods. I mean, it's wheat, right? Like that's a big one to take away. It's sugar, alcohols, lactose. So any dairy products, soluble fibers like inulin, chicory root, certain vegetables, certain fruits like apples and pears. I mean, it's a ton of foods. So my big thing is like red flag. Do we really want someone to pull all of those amazing carbohydrates out of their diet when they're a runner, right? We talk about all the time around here about how important it is to make sure that we're getting adequate carbohydrates as runners. And, you know, if we pull all of these things out of there, that could potentially be a problem. So what I typically have people do is let's try to figure out what foods are bothering you. If we need to eliminate a few things at a time to see, let's do it. But I typically don't like put anyone straight on a FODMAP diet and take all of those foods out because it's just too restrictive for most runners.
Like what can you eat on the FODMAP? Like what's something that's not one of those things?
Water. Like gluten-free products, right? That are like more corn or rice-based. Yeah. Rice would be okay. There's certain vegetables and certain fruits that you can have, but it's certain quantities. It is incredibly restrictive.
It ain't broccoli. I'll tell you, it's not broccoli. No.
Yeah, that just sounds sad.
Well, let me ask you a question. How much farting is too much farting? Like, when does it become a problem?
This is actually a really good question, Thomas. So there's never anything wrong with farting. Nothing wrong with that. But for people with IBS, that gas doesn't move. So it causes a lot of pain and distension and bloating and discomfort. Like, it's better if you're just passing that gas through, right? But that's not happening for someone.
So if she doesn't want to do the FODMAP, like, that's, like, so intense. Like, what would you recommend? Where does she start?
Right. So, I mean, you know, I log with people. So it's a tracking log of when we're eating and what we're eating, not necessarily the numbers. So a lot of times I'll just have them comment on their GI tract. What's going on? How are you feeling? Right. So that we can start to figure out like, okay, when you ate this for dinner last night, that run did not go well. Let's not eat that. Let's try this. Let's see what happens. And it's kind of more just like watching to see what's causing what. And most of the time we can figure it out without having to eliminate absolutely everything because it is. It's just really tricky. And if it truly was like, this is the end all be all, this is going to work for sure, like maybe some people would want to, but it's so individualized, I guess is another good thing. Like one person with IBS might be sensitive to lactose and another person might not, you know? So,
well, see, I was going to ask you that question.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's people that have different issues and everybody reacts to things. One, is there any genetic background that causes that? Like, could you be from a certain race, not religion, but a certain race or a geographical spot that would, you're more apt to be allergic to certain foods? Or is there something that you know of that you could say, hey, if everybody avoided this one, this 98-80% of the time, this is the thing that's getting you. Can you hit on that?
Oh, for sure. So the rye, I think like there's like this vague symptom of IBS in so many people because we're adding sugar alcohols to everything now. And I call them fake fibers, like the inulin or the chicory root. Like that's why I'm so particular about protein bars, because a lot of the protein bars, like they think people want low carbs and high protein. So they pack them full of fiber and full of sugar alcohols. And it's just a recipe for feeling 6 months pregnant, you know, 6 hours after you eat it. And I think people are just like, oh, my stomach bothers me. I'm allergic to X, Y, or Z, or intolerant to this, when they're just eating, you know, One bars, Quest bars, Bear Bell bars, like all those things are just full of sugar alcohols and fiber, which cause this type of fermentation. So that's nothing that you guys ever eat. Like, I don't know, Thomas, I could dare you to eat one and see how you felt, and then you could understand
I'll do
what
it.
I'm talking about. But
I'll do it. Megan, you can report back.
Sounds fun.
Again, I won't do that to Beck, but
yeah, I mean, there's certain foods that everybody seems to know it's going to cause an issue. But I did not know about sugar alcohols.
Mm-hmm. Those are pretty wicked for anybody that has IBS. So I think the differentiating between like someone who doesn't have IBS and someone who does is just the symptoms associated with it. Like their stomach is more sensitive, right? They're feeling it more. They're feeling it to a higher degree. It's impacting their life more versus someone who's like, oh, my stomach hurts, I'll be fine in 2 hours, right? Like it's just kind of the varying symptoms and how people perceive them or feel them.
Just in case someone hasn't listened to this podcast before, can you explain what a sugar alcohol is again?
So a sugar alcohol is, it's in the structure of it is similar to sugar. So when we taste it, it tastes sweet, but it's not quite the same. So we can't actually absorb it. So we don't absorb that sugar alcohol. So again, it hits our GI tract. It empties from our stomach, goes into our small intestine. Our small intestine can't absorb it. So the bacteria in there ferment it instead.
Ah.
That's why it's like lower in calories, right? It's because we can't absorb it all. Yeah.
That's interesting you say that, because I just saw a study that came out for people who don't want sodium. I was like, we want sodium. But they found that they can hit like the bowl, like say you have a bowl of soup. Mm-hmm. You can put it in a bowl that makes the N plus, what's the N plus? Niacin or something. It charges that molecule so you taste it more. And they even have chopsticks and spoons that do the same thing so that your mouth feels and absorbs
salty.
That. Yeah.
Huh.
Without the sodium, it amplifies. It's like a sodium amplifier.
Yeah. I'm not shocked that that exists now, but that is wild. Like for somebody who does have to watch sodium, that would be.
Yeah.
Handy.
Electronics
right?
in your mouth.
It's crazy.
That's weird. I don't like it.
I don't want it.
Not for me. Okay, let's move on to another question here. This one is from Amanda Barnes. She said, I'm really struggling with having to poop during morning runs, TMI. No matter how early I wake up and try to go before, it doesn't happen. And if anything, it just stresses me out because I can't make myself go before. I need to head out the door, and all I did was miss out on more time asleep. Any advice on what to eat or not eat? Or how to get your digestion moving right when you wake up so it doesn't hit you mid-run. Thanks again, Amanda.
But like that happened to me in New York. Like I am normally clockwork. We got up for the New York City Marathon and I was freaking out because I just wasn't going.
Yeah, I know.
And I do think it's like sleep where you start going, well, geez, I need to go. And the more you start thinking about it, the more your body's like, nah, I don't think so.
Right. Right. Well, and just like you said, I mean, we're creatures of habit. So if we get used to going at a certain time, our body is used to going at a certain time, right? So sometimes we have to actually like retrain our bodies. Like, so sometimes when I see people swapping between running after work and running in the morning, they have trouble because their body, it's like they're doing different things all the time. And their body's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do this morning, right? So a lot of this is just habitual, like getting into the habit of going before you run. You guys probably noticed like when you went to Tokyo or when I went to Berlin, I felt like it was all off because it's like our body doesn't know what time it is, right? Like our pooping schedule gets jet lagged as well.
But so, those toilets are amazing.
I haven't been yet. I'll
Japanese toilets. I could spend an entire day on the toilet. It's fantastic.
Oh, T. Mm-hmm. Yep, just like that. So we've got to get our body programmed to be more consistent. So typically you know, what we do when we're working with somebody for this is thinking through, where is my bathroom stop? Because it's not like we can just immediately get our body to like go before we run. So if you want, I agree, sleep in, get the amount of sleep you need, have your pre-run fuel, know where that bathroom is. Just plan 3 miles in, run towards a place that either a construction site with a porta potty or your local gas station. Bush. Just make sure, right? Or run back home quickly. And then slowly, if you're consistent with always running in the morning, we should be able to train ourselves to be going before. Obviously, coffee helps with this. So if somebody gets up and drinks coffee before they run, that can be a GI stimulant to help things move through. So I think a lot of this is literally her like reprogramming her body to go, which takes some time and some patience. And in the meantime, just know where you can stop until your body adjusts.
But that, like, okay, so we live in a city, so it'd be really easy for me to like dodge into a hotel or something. But like most of you guys are just running along neighborhoods and roads. Mm-hmm. Like
you should just do a mile out and back. Just go mm-hmm. back to the just house.
Get it that warmed too. Up.
That's what yeah. I would do.
Yeah, but what if you're mm-hmm. running with other people? You got to be like, look, if you run with me, there's a break.
Yeah.
There's
no or such you just thing meet as them TMI. After your,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you just yeah. meet them after. You yeah. say, I do my 2 mile warm up and I'll meet you at this
I
time.
Like that. The yeah. two. Yeah. I do my own 2 mile warm up.
Yeah.
You seriously. Know what I was just thinking mm-hmm. about though? So all these people who live in Japan, when they come over here, they must think we're barbarians. And can you imagine what they think of the porta potties?
Oh, like, it's gosh,
just a
yeah.
bucket.
They probably think we're yeah. disgusting.
Yeah, it's a downgrade over here.
I am yeah. sorry to our foreign visitors that we don't have the technology that you guys have everywhere.
Yeah,
like even like different. Even like crummy bars and stuff had really nice. Yeah, I can't wait for you to report back.
I can't wait.
Okay, real quick though, back to Amanda's question. Is there anything mm-hmm. she should like not be doing like the night before, like eating wise, or like should she be drinking more? Like, does hydration help? Is there anything she could be doing maybe in the evening?
So it sounds like it's so consistent. Like if it's not happening all the time, I'd be like, hey, what are we eating yeah. for dinner? Like, do we need to watch our fiber at dinner? But it seems like it's so consistent that it makes me think it's just more of a that's the habit her body is in. But I mean, that is true. Like if we're dehydrated, we're not going to be able to go as early, but maybe then when we start running, it'll stimulate things. So yeah, making sure that we're well hydrated, not like changing up our nutrition dramatically day to day so that that's consistent as well. Might kind of help things out. But you know, I think besides that, it's probably just more of like a routine type thing.
You know what that just reminded me of? That meme where he's like, I wonder if every time Pavlov hears a bell,
yeah.
he wants to feed the dog.
That was the best thing ever because it did blow my mind when he said that.
It's true.
Okay.
It's time to feed the dog.
All right, Amanda, good luck to you and keep us posted. Mm-hmm. This next question is from Annie. She said, hey, Thomas, Megan, and Feathers.
There you go. He's happy.
First, love this show. It got me all hyped up on all things nutrition. So thank you. My question is on feeling so freaking nauseous at the end and for 2 to 3 hours after a long run. I'm training for Chicago, going for 310 to 3 hour range and entering taper. I've done my 22 and 24, but every time I get to 19-ish, I feel so, so nauseous, like puke, and my stomach feels bloated and I have to stop at a porta potty. I take a caffeinated gel around 40 minutes in and every 20 to 30 alternate between a regular Morton and Ucan. I've been fine doing this until I started hitting the 20-mile runs. I carry Scratch in a handheld and I'm usually able to get 30 to 40 ounces in. I am a sweater. But now I'm just so confused at why I'm hitting this nauseated feeling. Am I having too much or too little? For reference, I had a total of 6.5 gels during the 24 I did last weekend. Thanks in advance.
Annie. I have a feeling about this, Annie. And here's what it is, because I've noticed I don't get it on training runs. Training runs, I'm fine, but I'm also not going full out. And so when I am in a race and I've given it a really solid effort and I finish that race and I feel nauseous and I don't want to eat and I'm like, feel a little gross. It's like I don't even want to have a celebratory drink or anything.
Celebratory.
I think it's probably, and I want to guess so that Megan can tell me, or Feathers can tell me if I'm right or wrong. Your blood is then going to your extremities because it's trying to propel your legs, it's trying to work your arms. So while the gels and stuff are getting digested early on, as you tax your body more and you're more and more further away and out and doing it, you're probably getting less blood to your GI tract. And so whatever you're putting in there is probably just sitting and making you feel gross.
Mm-hmm. I could certainly be a piece of it. We know intensity is part of feeling nauseous, right? For exactly like what you just said, because the blood flow is going other places. So that's totally it. I wanted to look up what Annie's last name was to see if she met her goal of 310. So you'll have to let us know, Annie. But what struck me is that she is having these issues in training and in races. So that leads me to think it's more than just the intensity, Thomas. So she's having this frequently in her training run. She's having it. And then she says she's a sweater. So my thought is, even though she's taking one serving of scratch, she's using Morton, which we know doesn't have sodium in it. So I think if she picked up the amount of total fluids and the amount of sodium that she was taking in per hour, that she could probably keep this nausea to a more reasonable level. Like you said, it's probably going to happen for most people.
What's happening when the sodium is depleted that causes nausea?
So when we are a salty, heavy sweater, we're getting dehydrated faster. So the faster we get dehydrated, the less blood flow we have to our GI tract. So it's like, it's all kind of related in the background to exactly what you already said of like not enough blood flow to our stomach, to our intestines, those types of things. But we know if we can keep more fluid on board, we can keep a little extra sodium on board, that what's going to happen is we're going to have less stress to that GI tract. So we have all sorts of research to show that. That's why we talk about hyperhydration and all that kind of stuff. So we're not stressing it quite so much. And for a lot of people, that dehydration symptom is nausea. So my guess is that that's probably what's happening with her. So I would encourage her to aim for like 400 to 600 milligrams of sodium per hour and see if that keeps that nausea at bay. She probably only got that much total in her 24-mile race or run that she told us about, because she only had one serving of scratch. So I think if we just pick that, like we play with it, right? Tinker with it and see how she feels.
So you remember when Megan here had issues with cramping and dehydration that she, mm-hmm. and she was hydrating and everything, but not the right way. And Meg, have you never had an issue with the GI tract though? It wasn't like stomach cramps. It was always leg cramps, right?
Yeah, it was all muscle cramping. Mm-hmm. Except for when I took hot shots and then, you know.
And she threw up.
Hurled.
Vomited that right up. Hey.
How about them hot shots? You still using those?
No.
I don't even think Shalane is. But yeah, so it can really, it can mess with people in different ways, right? Like, so mm-hmm. This person's having a GI tract, so it's just... Mm-hmm. blood flow and where your mm-hmm. Megan's happened to not be going to her legs. Mm-hmm. And for somebody else, it could be the stomach. Mm-hmm. Is it something you can train out of? Like, you know how like sometimes you get to a certain level and you're no longer getting side stitches. You're no longer shin splints or something like that. Is it something that can you train out of not having enough sodium?
No. I don't know how you would. Yeah. I can't imagine how you would. Something that when you were talking, this is not related, but it made me think of it when you were talking. Like when someone has like this nausea, I always like try to dig a little bit deeper as to like, what does it feel like? Like, does it feel like you're just straight up nauseous and like you could dry heave? Or does it feel like there's too much in your stomach that's jostling around that isn't emptying? Because those, we would handle those things a little bit differently. Like if it feels like nothing is emptying, we know that's like the cyclic dextrin that's in the scratch, or the maltodextrin empties faster from our stomach. So we might switch to the scratch high carb or the never second that has, you know, so there's different types of carbohydrates that empty at different rates. So sometimes when people are nauseous, I take it like a few steps further to find out like, what else do you feel? You know what I mean? So that we can try to figure out like, no, that's probably sodium. No, maybe that is the type of gel you're taking. Maybe you are dehydrated, you know, so we can kind of tinker with it and play. But a lot of the stuff, like there's no like, try A, B, and C, you know, it's literally like throwing things and seeing what helps. And that's why we want to practice this a lot in training.
But okay. This is okay. Sometimes I wonder, you know, if you're full of shit or not, but
I am, it's all made up.
No, I'm kidding. I never do. But this is exactly though why I love being able to talk to you, because you will get advice online for what works for an individual. So you will get, okay, you need to, Megan had problems, more salt, take in more nutrition, should be okay. Mm-hmm. And Megan could go off and spout that to everybody. I found the solution. This is what it is. What I love about what you just said was, if you dial it in further and you find out, okay, it may just be one ingredient in a product that you're using that is causing you issues. And that's why it's important for people to test stuff and figure out the different combination of nutrition and what their body needs. But it's interesting because I even fall into it. And now we've been doing this show for how long have we been doing Feel for the Soul now? Two years and a half.
I think we're coming up on three this fall. Oh no, it's two. No, we hit two. It is the fall. I think we hit two. And okay, sorry, go ahead. Okay.
All right. So, but what it is like I even am apt to still fall into that trap where I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not somebody, but I know it works for me. I know it works for Megan. We talk about stuff on the show. So I'm like, well, your problem is you're probably not getting enough salt or this and that. Whereas, like, I liked your approach that you don't know. And you have to experiment and try different things and see what works for the individual.
And honestly, I had two people that had horrific nausea and it ended up being two different medical conditions. We tried everything we could. Nothing was better. It wasn't predictable about. So at that point, it was like, okay, this is beyond what we can touch with nutrition. There's something else going on, right? So both of them went their respective ways. They figured out what it was and then came back and they're like, this is what's going on. And we figured out what we need to do. So like, we start with the easy fixes, more sodium, a different type of gel, more fluid or different fluids. But, you know, if somebody is really, really struggling, it's not the normal, you know, it's not normal that like something is going on medically that's causing this. But that's always, you know, always in the back of my mind, too. Like, are we missing something? Do we need to look into this besides just our discussion? So, you know, obviously, if somebody's out there like with debilitating issues, like get a medical provider involved, too. And, you know, just make sure doing everything we need to be doing.
I like that. That's our legal segment for the day.
For the year.
Yeah.
We are not doctors.
Okay. Like, let's answer another listener question. This one is from Tracy G.
What's up, Jay?
She said, hi, Fuel for the Soul friends. I am having GI distress and want to see if you have any insight. I ran my first marathon this past spring. This was a dream realized after having two children. I've learned so much from this podcast. You all are the best. I worked through some GI issues in the spring as I learned about proper fueling and hydration during my training, but about mid-July, I started having problems during the majority of my runs. I'm now at a loss on next steps. I make sure I'm hydrated. I incorporated electrolytes this summer. I eat well throughout the day. I don't eat too many veggies or fiber, and I get enough sleep. I run early in the morning and only have about 30 minutes between waking up and starting my run. I almost always pre-fuel with graham crackers. Yeah, GI distress happens just about at mile 3 or 25 to 30 minutes, sometimes again around mile 5 and 6, and then I'm fine.
Could be the graham cracker.
What would be your next step suggestions?
Don't go for the grams.
It would be hard to wake up even earlier for digestion time, and I don't want to cut out graham crackers. Help this mama out. Thanks.
Well, I like that it's Tracy G, right?
This is Tracy G.
Tracy G has GI issues.
Okay. Sure, she loves that.
Yeah.
Here we go. Okay. Here we go. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is A, she's clearly a super fan. And B, she's tried everything we talk about on this podcast, which is amazing. So thank you for actually. Dumbass. Thank you, Tracy, for actually taking our advice and trying it out, which leads me to two kind of thoughts here. One is that this hit you in July, which is when it's hottest, right? So like, are we really getting enough sodium and fluid, or are we starting these runs dehydrated? Also, it could be a conversation back up like, who was that, Amanda, on a timing thing, like retraining our bodies, but then it's happening multiple times for her. So I'm like, I think it might be a little bit more. So my thought is let's double check the sodium and the hydration piece here. And then after that is she talked a lot about having two kids and getting into running after two kids. So I think it's pertinent to notice that I have had a lot of female runners that we have checked every single box to try to figure out what to do, and they are still having unpredictable issues. And we know that runners, especially mom runners who have had babies, have weak pelvic floors. And when our pelvic floor is weak or dysfunctional, sometimes that causes GI issues. So if she has checked every box, like she's tried everything that we've talked about on this podcast, the next thing would be is to find a pelvic floor physical therapist and go have them check you out, you know, and see like, is there any weakness? Is there any dysfunction in that that could potentially help you control it a little bit more? So that would kind of be my next thought for her after she just really dials in the sodium and fluid piece, you know, because it did hit her in the summer. So that makes me wonder if the hydration wasn't quite right, but also the kid piece.
Yeah, when she said July, that was my first thought too, was like, if it's hitting in July, like I know, like if I'm not properly hydrated in the summer, like I have a super strong stomach, and yeah, I feel like I never have issues. But if I ever do, it's from dehydration in the middle of summer.
Mm-hmm. I didn't put two and two together, but you're probably right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She do? Is she? Did she say she's doing a scratch the night before?
She didn't. She did like, talk about like watching fiber the night before. That's huge, right?
My big thing on when we're in the summer,
mm-hmm.
I do hyperhydration before anything that's like above 12 miles. I'll do that just because I know I'm gonna I drench.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I totally agree.
All right, let's answer a few more questions here because we were just talking about fiber and this one is related. This is mm-hmm. from Lisa. She said, hi, my name is Lisa. Since I started running marathons, I am apprehensive to eat fiber because of fear I'll have to go to the bathroom during a run, which has usually backfired on me because I have to go anyway.
Backfired.
What are... What are the fiber needs for runners? Do we need more or less? Should fiber be reduced during a whole training cycle or just before hard efforts and races? Thank you. Love the show.
All right. Can we first, what are some fibers that we're talking about? Like breads, like wheat?
Whole
like
grains.
What is fibers?
Whole grains. Grain? So if you're eating whole wheat bread, whole wheat pasta, whole wheat tortillas, that type of stuff versus the white will not have fiber. Obviously fruits, vegetables, berries are higher fiber vegetables. Fruit, berries are fruit, not a vegetable. And beans, lentils, all those types of things. Like, honestly, when you think about building like a really healthy plate, like it's really high in fiber, right? It's whole grains. It's maybe
is that why
beans.
It's healthy? Because it typically fills you up and, you know, you're going to crap most
digestion.
Of it out.
Well, and things that still have the fiber intact, like the whole grains or fruits and vegetables with the skin and the peels and all that kind of stuff, like that's what holds a lot of the micronutrients. So that's what holds the vitamins and the minerals. So it just kind of goes hands in hands that like the nutrient dense foods are typically the higher fiber foods. Not always, but yeah. So a lot of people think they're doing themselves like all this good by eating these huge salads and massive amounts of vegetables and leaning more like lentil and beans and whole grains and that kind of stuff. And it's just too much fiber for their body. So to answer your question, like women need 25 grams of fiber a day and men need 38. So we don't necessarily need to change that just because we're a runner unless we don't tolerate that much fiber. Probably, again, goes back to the IBS conversation. Like sometimes people can't tolerate that amount of fiber in their diet when they're running more. GI tracts tend to move things through a little faster when we're training more. So I do see people might have more issues with fiber when they're training at a higher intensity versus taking some time off. So sometimes we have to adjust that a little bit. But there's no hard and fast rule of like, don't eat fiber while you're training because most people do fine with fiber. But it sounds like Lisa might not be fine with eating a lot of fiber. So in that case, I would just have her scale it back like the day or the night before a workout and long run. And then the rest of the time when it's easy runs, if you have to stop, you have to stop, right? Because we don't want to change our nutrition for 12 weeks. We want to be able
to
eat
what we like. Give me an example of a pre-run meal that's not going to have a ton of fiber, but will still provide you with all the carbs and stuff that you need for a double digit run.
Like a good example would be just eating like white pasta and some turkey meatballs with sauce the night before. And something that might get someone like Lisa into trouble is like my vegetable pad thai that uses whole wheat pasta, has a ton of vegetables in it, edamame, which have fiber. Like that would be something that we would maybe not eat the night before.
That would wreck Lisa.
It sounds like it would. Now, it doesn't wreck everybody. Oh, so if you're listening and you're like, I eat your spaghetti pad thai before all my long runs, keep doing it, right? But for some people, that just might be way too much fiber for their body to handle.
But in general, as a runner, we don't need more or less. It's just what our body can handle and mm-hmm. how our stomach reacts to, I guess, the amount.
All right. I'm gonna jump in right here with a question that I don't know necessarily falls right into Lisa's thing, but it is that thing of like, choices between fiber foods and this and, you know, calorie dense and all that. Mm-hmm. I'm still catching like ads for different stuff on Instagram or YouTube where they're talking about you're not going to burn fat if you're eating carbs. You're going to burn carbs during your exercise. You're not losing weight and you're not, not that weight loss is our main thing here. Our main mm-hmm. thing is performance, mm-hmm. but is that dumb people science when they're like, if you're eating carbs, you're going to burn carbs. You're not going to burn fat. Is that
I don't want to say dumb people science because there's some truth to it. There is.
Okay.
Like if we took me and we put me on a machine and collected my oxygen consumption and carbon dioxide production, we could tell like how much carb versus fat I'm burning at all different intensity levels. And if somebody came up and was more fat adapted, if you will, and is somebody who's low carb and does more of the Maffetone, that type of stuff, they probably would be burning lower percentages of carbs and higher percentages of fat compared to me, right? But does that mean we're losing fat mass? No, not at all. We have plenty of research to show that just because we're burning more fat for fuel does not mean that we're meeting body composition changes faster. It's total energy burn on the whole day. And sometimes the higher intensity exercise actually torches more energy. Maybe it's carbs in the moment, but in the scheme of body composition changes,
your whole system,
you know, that higher intensity exercise, which burns more carbs, is actually what works better. So it's like super nuanced, right? Because, I mean, you're right. Like, it's depending on.
I mean, we always talk about this. If being ripped or, you know, losing body fat is the goal, mm-hmm. then what should you be doing?
So even when I work with people for weight loss, I still don't take their carbs down to like minimal by any means. I watch their fat more than anything because no one is not running while they're trying to lose weight. They're just not training as hard, right? So we still need carbs on a daily basis just to fuel our brain. And then we also need carbohydrates to run. So typically what I do is keep their protein really high, take a look at where our carbs are, and then fill in fat for the rest so that they're at a little bit of an energy deficit throughout the day so that we can see those body composition changes with hopefully minimizing muscle loss and then still being able to perform well.
All right. Our last question today is from Sandra Mock. She said, why does my stomach get weird and I have to use the bathroom immediately around mile 5 of absolutely any run? I'm an experienced marathoner, but this is fairly new to me. I did take about 6 months off and I'm returning to running now. So embarrassing.
So for Sandra, honestly, we've kind of answered the thought here. Like maybe it's like her body and when it wants to go. She did take some time off. So she's getting back into another routine. But I wanted to take Sandra's question and use that as like, if anybody's listening to this and we have any type of GI issues we're trying to work through. Like if you were to call me up and be like, hey, Megan, the things that are going to go through my mind that I'm going to be checking off in the background to try to help you figure out what's going on is first and foremost is hydration. So not just performance hydration that we're taking before, during, and after our run, but how's our daily hydration? So I talked to somebody yesterday who was nailing their hydration around their run, but their daily hydration was terrible. So they were going into all their runs dehydrated, but they thought they were doing okay because they were taking in fluids during, right? So we want to look at both of those. And if we can check that, like, nope, Megan, it's not hydration, right? Then next we would take a look at fiber intake. So maybe Sandra is just eating way too much fiber, like we were just talking about. What goes in's got to come out. So the things that we cannot digest, we're just building up too much, right? Maybe we're just getting way too much fiber. So we could take a look at that. Timing of GI tract. We talked about how we can kind of retrain that over time. We talked about how like caffeine can be a little bit of a stimulant to that. So we could take a look at that. And then also thinking through too, if like none of this is working, you know, again, bringing in that PT that's like a specialist for pelvic floor to see if there's some, you know, strengthening things that we can do to just make that more manageable and less urgent.
Like that's like a solid checklist that anyone should go through if they have GI issues of any kind.
Right. And then for a female, we could add hormones in there too. That could, but this is happening daily for her, so probably not.
It does seem. Yeah. I don't know if it's that our audience is more female, or that do more women have GI issues. Is there a difference, like biologically?
That's a good question. I've had quite a few guys with GI issues. Now, again, my clientele base is 80% female. So, I mean, that skews things a little bit, but I have had quite a few guys with GI issues. I don't know, maybe just women are more apt to talk about them because I don't know. But yeah, no, I don't think it's necessarily something that affects women more. Circulating like high hormone phases will increase the likelihood of GI issues. So like ovulation and right before, you know, menstruation, but none of these were related to that, right? All these were just general questions. So I think, you know, that's the only thing that would, in my mind, kind of differentiate between men and women.
Okay, that does it for us this week. Thank you all for listening, as always.
And you know what? Thanks for sharing. Like, it's tough. Nobody wants to be like, hey, I'm a lousy shitter. But, you know, thanks for sharing your issues because it will help. Obviously, there's more people out there struggling with GI issues. So maybe you just help somebody else with the help of feathers and the Megan.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. We will chat with you all in 2 weeks.
Bye.
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 Oh, wait. Peas and carrots. They're fiber, both of them.
They are.
That's three things.
Peas and carrots?
Oh, I thought you said peas and carrots and fiber.
No, peas and carrots are fiber.
Okay. Yeah, they have fiber. Okay.
Uh-huh. What?
They do. Bye.
Bye.
To introduce yourself, get off your phone.
I am. Hold on one sec.
Jeez, we're live.
Are we?
Yeah.
In 3, 2, 1. Put it by the microphone, not your head. Oh, there.
Ready?
The beat gonna drop?
Yeah, I know. Wait for it. Wow, your hair is not okay.
Wait, leave it like that.
I gotta turn it off now.
Leave it like that.
No, don't. No, please don't.
You look like you have a toupee.
What do you look like? Okay, you need to introduce yourself.
I guarantee it's all real and all natural. Ready to go?
We are. I don't know what's happening over here.
When it comes to pelvic floors, are you more of a hardwood or carpet?
What?
Are you going to be able to cut out the fart noise?
Yeah, because it was your mic is different than her mic.
Okay, yeah, but she was laughing, so I don't know.
I should have held it together better.